7.
She's taking her test.
Now, 287 in your text, it goes into the section on platelets and blood clotting. Blood clotting, when you read through the material, they're about a lot, you know, in different situations. Blood clotting is very important because if there's going to be an injury to the body and then there can be blood that is lost, clotting is a mechanism that's going to stop this loss of blood by causing what we call an agglutination of the blood, where it begins to thicken. And when you read through the material, you find out that when you have a cut and you put a bandage around it and you put pressure on it, then it's going to initiate the clotting mechanism. One of the procedures that was done a lot in radiology is where they have to do a cut down into the femoral artery and inject a catheter in through it that would go up into the aorta system to take blood samples, you know, and see if there's any occlusion in the major arteries. When they are completely done with that study, of course, you have a wound there that's going to be bleeding. So oftentimes, the tech will have to stand there and put a lot of pressure on there for about maybe 15 minutes, and that is going to help to initiate, you know, the clotting mechanism. So the third type of formed element that we study that is involved in clotting are the platelets. The platelets is the third main type. Your life might someday be saved just because your blood is able to clot. A clot plugs up torn or cut vessels and stops bleeding that otherwise might prove to be fatal. The story of how blood clots is the story of a chain of rapid-fire reactions. The first step in the chain is some kind of an injury to the blood vessel that makes a rough spot in its lining. Because, see, normally the blood lining is going to be very, very smooth. Okay? Almost immediately, when there is some kind of damage that has occurred, the damaged tissue cells in the injured vessel wall releases certain clotting factors into the plasma. Okay. These factors rapidly react with other factors already present in the plasma to form what we call a prothrombin activator. Prothrombin activator. At the same time this is happening, the platelets become sticky at the point of injury and soon accumulate near the opening in the broken blood vessel, forming a soft temporary platelet plug. So these platelets then, they kind of congregate there, and then it forms like a sticky glue, if you want to call it that, that helps us to stop the bleeding. Because the main thing you want to do is make sure that there isn't, you know, going to be a loss of blood. Okay? As the platelets accumulate, they release additional clotting factors, forming even more prothrombin activator. If the normal amount of blood calcium is present, prothrombin activator triggers the next step by clotting of the clotting mechanism by converting prothrombin to thrombin. And then finally, in the last step, thrombin reacts with fibrinogen to change it to a fibrous gel known as fibrin. Under the microscope, fibrin looks like a tangle of fine threads with RBCs caught in the tangle. This meshwork is the blood clot that forms a more long-term seal to the damaged blood vessel. So then the final stage on this is to make sure that we get to where the fibrin is going to be developed. And then you're going to get this mesh of threads with the red blood cells intertwined in it. And then it's going to be almost like the body's natural kind of gauze that's going to be there to, you know, help prevent the loss of this blood because it's going to solidify in that area. The clotting mechanism contains clues for ways to stop bleeding by speeding up blood clotting. For example, you might simply apply gauze to a bleeding surface. Its slight roughness would cause more platelets to stick together and release more clotting factors. These additional factors would then make the blood clot more quickly. So timing is of the essence when you have something like this. Okay. Physicians sometimes prescribe vitamin K before surgery to make sure that the patient's blood will clot fast enough to prevent hemorrhage. Vitamin K stimulates liver cells to increase the synthesis of prothrombin. More prothrombin in blood allows faster production of thrombin during clotting and thus faster clot formation. A few years ago, surgeons also began using a product made of fibrinogen and thrombin, which when mixed formed a kind of artificial clot at the site of the bleeding. Okay. Anybody of you who knows, anyone who goes through like heart surgery, when I left here 4 years ago, I had to go and have valve surgery done. And the cardiologist explained to me that there are two kind of valves that you can have in you. I had a new aortic valve put in. And he said you can have either the pigskin valve, which is only good for about 10 years, but then you don't have to worry about anything else, or you can have the metal valve, but if you have the metal valve put in, you have to take a blood thinner every day. So I take a blood thinner every day. I take Coumadin, or it's called warfarin. And what I have to do is every 2 or 3 weeks, I have to go and have my blood drawn, you know, and what they do is they test the rate at which it clots, because it cannot clot too thick and it cannot be too thin. There's a range that it has to be in, and if it's too thick or too thin, then they adjust the amount of medicine that I take, because the last thing they want is that a clot is going to develop inside of that valve. Then it's not going to function. So if you know people that are on warfarin, that's one of the reasons they take it. However, because my blood does get a little bit thinner, you know, than usual, I have to be careful. If I have anything like a cut, I probably need to go to the hospital and have it taken care of. I mean, if it's a real bad cut, you know, I mean, I nick myself, you know, when I shave, you know, and you know, I don't notice that it bleeds any more than it used to before, you know. The other concern is if you have a procedure that's going to cause blood to develop, you know, like if you go in for any kind of tooth extraction, then you have to be off the Coumadin for about 2-3 days. And, you know, one time I had to have that done, and one time I went in for the colonoscopy, and, you know, so, and then I called the cardiologist's office and said, well, you don't want to be any, no more than 2 or 3 days. Can't be off the Coumadin. But you see, the colonoscopy, if they go in with an instrument and they nick the inside wall of the intestine and it starts to bleed, it can bleed more so if you're on the Coumadin, so they take you off the Coumadin. And a lot of times, like you read in the chapter, the heparin is also used, you know, to help. Okay. But what they do, the test that I have done is the prothrombin time. They want to see, you know, how much the blood thickens, and they can tell if it's too thick or too thin. And they also tell me that when I have any kind of food that has vitamin K in it, it's okay to do it, but the recommendation is that you have the same amount every week. Because if you have a whole bunch of vitamin K 1 week, then you don't have any, then all you're going to be doing is causing a fluctuation in the amount that you're taking. You know, they're going to say, oh yes, it's getting way too thin now. So then, you know, you have to stop taking it. Then if you don't, you take a lower amount, and then you're not taking anything with vitamin K, then it goes to the other end of the spectrum, and it gets too thick. So if you know anybody who's going to be on, you know, a warfarin, they can have, like, broccoli or anything else with vitamin K, but have the same amount each week. Just don't overload it one time, you know, like that. So,
is it possible to control it just with diet, or do you have to take the drug?
You have to take the medication, especially for a heart valve. Because, you know what, with the the human error that you can make in your own diet, you wouldn't want to have anything happen. And then you also want to have it monitored. And if they monitor it and they tell you that, it's too thin, they don't have a way of knowing how to change your diet. But with the medicine, they do, And the thing is, you have to go in, whenever they tell you. If you go in, if everything is okay and the values don't change, you normally can go, once a month. So there were times I was going once a month, and all of a sudden there were times when I got to go, even every week, because it seemed to be changing. But the best thing is to make sure you, have it monitored.
Were you getting your blood done, or did you just do the
things? The what? It depends on where I go. A couple places do the finger stick, then they put it on the little slide, and they put it in the machine that measures it, and then they print out the values. It's computerized.
Yeah, it's a nice little setup they can have right in the doctor's office now. Uh-huh. Cardiology office really should do it. It's really
my primary physician now does it. He has one of those.
Yeah.
But if I go to, I'm surprised that places like LabCorp, they do it by drawing from the arm, and then when you have blood drawn every couple of weeks, like for 4 years I've been going through this, and then your veins start to get sclerotic.
Yeah.
Sometimes they can't find them because they've nicked them so much that healing scars keep developing, and
right.
If I have to go through this for another 30 years, hopefully I want to be around in 30 years, but that's a lot to go through. So the finger stick thing is, so far pretty good.
Your insurance lets you go to your doctor's office, right?
Yeah. Okay, now that we know about clotting, we want to talk a little bit about the blood types. The blood types are on page 290. The first thing we need to learn about is that within our blood system, we can have these factors that are called antigens, or we can have antibodies. But the way that we have those depends upon your blood type. And it's always important for you to know your blood type. And it's also important for you to know your spouse's blood type. Because, as the chapter explains, when people have children, certain blood types don't mix. And there can be some problems. But if you know your blood types ahead of time, then you know what's going to happen. So it's really important because, if you're in an accident, or if you have a relative who has, needs a blood transfusion, sometimes you have to know which blood types are available and which aren't. If you give the wrong blood type, certain blood mixtures cause heavy, heavy agglutination, and that's not good for the blood. Then it gets too thick and it's going to clot up in places. And if you have a blood clot in the major arteries leading to the heart or to the brain, you're going to end up with a stroke or a heart attack, and you're going to die. So you have to really, watch this. Okay, on page 290, they have a chart that shows you what happens when you mix different kind of factors together. Okay, now first of all, the antigen. Everybody may have antigens in their blood. Antigens are substances which trigger responses in the body, and they cause the other factors known as antibodies to come to the rescue. Now, we have normal antigens within us. They're called self-antigens, and because of our blood type, they're going to be there, and there's no problem unless you mix it with antibodies that are going to react with it. Because antibodies and antigens, they're kind of like enemies. And the antibodies are going to attack the antigens. So if you get blood, you have to have the kind of blood that does not have the antibodies that are going to attack you. Okay. So the body, depending on the blood type, can have what is called self-antigens, those that are part of the person's blood normally. The blood type names the self-antigen present in the red blood cells. So if you look on page 290, where it has the recipient's blood in the left-hand columns, and then you'll have RBC antigens. If you see where it says type O blood has no antigens, and therefore that's how something they call a typo. There are no antigens in O. And that's an important thing to remember, because if there's no antigens in O, well, then if they get antibodies put in there, there's no antigens for it to mess around with. So maybe everything's going to be okay. Okay. However, in the plasma, they have anti-A and anti-B antibodies. Okay. Now, if you look at type A people are going to have the A antigen. Because remember, the type that you are is named for the antigen that's present in you. Okay. Then they're going to have an anti-B antibody. Now, remember we said antibodies and antigens don't mix. But they have to be the same type. So if you have antigen A and antibody B, then they're okay. They can live together because they're not the same. Okay. So the main thing is that if a person is type A and they have the type A antigen, you don't give that person the antibody, you know, which is also A. And we'll explain that. Type B people, they'll have the type B antigen in their red blood cell, then they'll have the anti-A. Now they can have the A because the A and the B are not the same, and therefore the blood is okay. Now we'll come to a type that's called AB. So we have AB together, but for some reason they don't have any antibodies, and therefore that puts them in a kind of unique situation. Type AB people are known as a universal recipient because they can receive blood from anybody and there's not going to be any kind of a reaction to it. Okay. If you look at the yellow columns going across the top, these are the donors. So if the people on the left-hand side in the left column, if those people are the recipients and they need to receive blood, it tells you what's going to happen if they get blood from all these other people, depending on their type. Okay, now, where it has the normal blood, you'll see in the bottom, it gives you the diagram for what the normal blood looks like. And then where the blood, the cells start to congregate together, they agglutinate. Okay, so that is what you don't want to have, where it clumps together and agglutinates, because when it does that, that's going to be bad for the body. So if you look at how all of these come together, you'll see whether it's going to result in a normal type of a blood or blood that's going to be clumped, and then that's not going to be good. So if you have a person who is type O, they can, of course, receive blood from another type O, because type O doesn't have any antibodies, so there's not going to be any interaction. But since type O people have an anti-A and an anti-B, they cannot receive from A or B or AB. Because if they receive from any of those three, then you're going to have, you know, the clumping developing. Okay, and that's what you don't want. So as you go through this chart, and then you match it over, like type A, they can receive again from type O. And if you look on the column for type O, anybody type O blood is given to, it's going to be okay. And so type O is called the universal donor, because no matter who the people of type O give their blood to, it's always going to be accepted, and there's not going to be any type of reaction. Type A has a agglutination for people with type O and for people with type B. Okay, but they're okay for people with type A. Okay, of course that's who you match them up with. It's the same blood type. So if they're type A, then of course they might have anti-B, but the person they're giving it to also has anti-B, and that's okay. Okay. And then type B people, if donor is type A and you give it to type B, then you're going to have agglutination and it's not going to work. Okay. So this chart is going to tell you that in certain cases, you're not going to be able to give the blood because it's going to accumulate and clump and agglutinate, and then it can you can have clotting problems where it can clot and stick in one part of the vein or travel and become stuck in a major artery of the heart or an artery leading up into the skull, you know, one of the carotid arteries, for example. Okay. For a moment, let's look at type AB on the left-hand column down in the bottom. Look what happens if type AB receives blood from O, A, B, or AB. It's always, always going to work. So type AB is known as the universal recipient because the universal recipient can receive from anyone. If you know that you are type AB or that your children are type AB, then everything is fine. You know, you don't have to worry. But if you're any of these, and then if you're the donor and you're type O, then you can come forward and donate blood to anybody. Okay? But with all of the others, it has to be cross-matched and typed and everything. You know, so when people get, you know, married and want to start a family, that's why it's important that the husband and the wife know their blood types. You know, then they can work with the physician. And as we'll see, there's an example where it can cause some problems, and we don't want that to happen. Okay, now we'll go over this again. I'm going to give you a website to go on to. In fact, if you have access to the computer when you go home, put in the search for blood typing games. And there's a game that comes up where three patients come into the hospital. It's all done like in cartoons. And you use the mouse to move them around. And three patients come into the hospital, and you move them into this room where they're going to get blood. And then what you have to do is you have to move the syringe. Oh, their arm is laying out. You have to move it over them, and you put it down into the skin, and the blood is drawn into the syringe. Then what you do is you take the blood and you put it in these three tubes. And one is for, you know, checking, you know, their blood type. And then we're going to get into the other area, which is called the Rh factor. And then when it goes in, you can see if it is going to be like normal blood or agglutinated blood. Then they have eight bags of blood hanging there, and then you have to pick one of them. It'll tell you what blood type and factor it is. And you have to take one of those and hang it on the IV pole. And then the blood goes in. All of a sudden, they start reacting. Oh, you get blood. You know, like this. Or, oh, good, you say, you did really, really good. Okay. However, this person can take another kind of blood, you know. So it's kind of an interesting game. So I had to say. Okay, let's go over the Rh factors. As you know, in our blood system, our blood is either going to be Rh positive or Rh negative. If you have Rh positive blood, it means that there is the factor present in the blood. If you are Rh negative, it means that there is no factor. So it's simply not a different kind of factor. It just means there's no factor at all. So it's minus the factor. Okay? So as it says on page 291, you may be familiar with the term Rh positive blood. It means the RBCs of this type of blood contain an antigen called the Rh factor. So this Rh factor is actually another type of antigen. Okay, now remember, antigens are okay if they're part of your own body system, but as we learned before, if other kind of antigens from somebody else goes in, then it's going to stimulate antibodies to come to your defense if they're the wrong kind. Okay, it says here about most people have the Rh factor present in their blood, but a small percentage of people do not have it, so they're going to be Rh negative. It says if, for example, a person has type AB Rh positive blood, His red blood cells, of course, have the antigen for A and the antigen for B, because the blood type is named for the antigens that are present in your blood. So if you have both A and B, then you're type AB. And then they also have the Rh factor antigen if they're AB Rh positive. The term Rh is used because this important blood cell antigen was first discovered in the blood of a rhesus monkey. You know, so in a certain sense, you can see the value of doing research on animals. So, you know, because of the monkeys, we have the rhesus factor in us. You know, I hope that's all we have, you know. But it's interesting that they call it that. Okay, it goes on to say that the Rh negative blood, and when you have that, the RBCs do not contain the factor at all. So if it's Rh negative, the factor is simply missing. Plasma never naturally contains anti-Rh antibodies. That's an important statement, because what they're saying is when a person is born, they're born with their Rh factor. If they're born Rh negative, they're never born with an Rh negative factor. However, let's see what happens here. If an Rh positive blood cells are introduced into Rh negative person's body, then anti-Rh antibodies soon appear in the blood plasma. Okay? So if you have an Rh negative person, and then that person is given Rh positive blood. Okay, so here's a person who's Rh negative. They receive Rh positive blood. What is going to happen? Anti-Rh antibodies. Okay, so now you have an antibody that's not the same type as the antigen, and then there's going to be this agglutination, and it's going to clump, and then there's going to be a problem for that person. So now not only do you have to be concerned about the blood type, but you have to make sure that the Rh factor is the kind that can be introduced. Okay, so then they go on, and then they talk about, let's say that you have a mother and a father, and they have a different blood type. Okay, so the mother is Rh negative, and the father Rh positive. Okay, so we already established what would happen if they come together. Okay, and this is kind of an interesting series of events. Okay, what they're saying is not always, but sometimes the baby can inherit the Rh positive factor. From the father. But where is the baby at when it's still growing inside the mother? It's the baby's developing in a mother who has Rh negative blood. Okay. So if the baby inherits the Rh positive factor, the factor in the RBCs may stimulate the mother's body to form anti-Rh antibodies. Okay, so you can get so with this situation, you'll get the formation of anti-Rh antibodies, and what they're saying is that this baby is actually going to be okay. Okay, this baby is going to actually be okay. However, these anti-Rh antibodies are going to stay present now in the mother's blood, because this is the result of this mixing. So now she's going to have this. Now from here, she goes on and she gets a second baby. And then let's say that baby is going to be Rh positive, and then now you have these anti-Rh antibodies mixing in the blood of the second fetus, and that's going to be where you're going to have the reaction. Okay? So an Rh negative mother carrying an Rh positive baby can be treated with a protein, though, called Rogan. You might have heard about Rogan, which stops her body from forming anti-Rh antibodies to prevent harm to the next baby. So what I'm seeing this is they can't do it when she's pregnant with the second one. They have to know when she's pregnant with the first one that this is what's happening. So pregnant women, when they go in to see the obstetrician, they get frequent blood tests. And from these blood tests, they can tell what's going on in her blood. And then they can tell by the blood of the father, the blood type of the mother, what's going on with the baby. And then they know ahead of time the situation that this can present for her. If she is in this situation with the first fetus, then that's when they can give her the Rogan, so she doesn't even develop these antibodies, which would be present then to cause problems for the second baby, because then it would cause agglutination, and the second baby would have a lot of problems. Okay? So, if she doesn't get the Rogan, then a future Rh-positive fetus could then receive the anti-Rh antibodies, resulting in severe agglutination or clumping, and develop a disease called erythroblastosis fetalis. Okay, and that's what it explains on page 292. And if a baby has that, well then of course everything is going to clump, and then it's, you know, the baby's not going to probably survive. Okay. So these are situations where it's very, very important for you to know your blood type, not only for purposes of having a child, but just so you know that if you go into the hospital, you know, what are they going to do, and who can be your donor, and who cannot be your donor. So if somebody in your family is a relative, needs some blood, you know, and they put out a call for it, and it's, you know, they don't have that blood type available, generally they know what type they need. You know, they're just not going to say, well, we need blood, and have everybody rush in and give blood, you know, and then they say, well, you can't give this blood because it's going to cause, you know, agglutination, you know, and stuff like that. So they'll put out what kind of blood that they're looking for. Okay, let's take a break.